believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest tonight grew up in Louisville, Kentucky, and has been a Major League starting pitcher for the last 13 years. He's been traded 6 times and is currently a member of the Cleveland Indians. He's just written his autobiography, Free Bird, The Power of a Liberated Life. And he believes that God is his pitching coach. His name, Paul Bird, Birdie. And I'm Jack Crisula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Now back to Anything Is Possible with Jack Crisula on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now here's Jack.
We're with Paul Bird, starting pitcher for the Cleveland Indians. Birdie, welcome. It's an honor to have you.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Can we start by talking about your childhood in Louisville?
We can.
And your parents.
All right. My mom was not sure if she was going through menopause or what, and next thing you know, she found out she was pregnant with me. My closest brother was already 16 years old, so she thought they were moving out of the house, and then along I came and terrorized the house and made her her work pretty tough, but enjoyed my parents. I'm my father's only son, so I had stepbrothers and stepsister, and my dad played 1 year of college basketball. My dad's name is Larry Bird, believe it or not, so I say the real Larry Bird, you know. And when I made the all-star team in 99 and we went to Boston, I had no trouble getting a table, you know. I would say, hey, you got a table for Larry Bird, and I get seated immediately. So it was good stuff. But no, I love my parents very much. And even though my dad, my dad was a police officer in Louisville during the civil rights era, over 90-something murders a year in Louisville alone in the 60s at that time. So, my dad had a really tough side to him, a disciplinarian side to him growing up, struggled a little bit with alcohol. Anybody that's been in a family, where there's been alcoholism and things like that, you know, you're aware of the things that go on. But the one thing I really appreciated about my dad is that he spent time with me and built into me. And even though, again, like I say, he had a year of college basketball, I loved baseball. And he took a special interest in me and bought a book called Tom Seaver, The Art of Pitching, because that was my heart, you know. So he would take me up to St. Matthew's Little League, Egg McMuffins, hash browns. We'd play some baseball, and that's where I kind of fell in love with the sport. And even today, when I stand on the fields in Major League Baseball, I think about that connection that I had with my father.
You go to LSU.
I do.
You're 20 years old, and in 1991, you win the College World Series.
Absolutely.
You're at the top of the mountain. Talk about that.
Well, you know, it was a great experience. I went to the World Series my freshman and sophomore year. We came in fourth, and LSU had been 2 years prior to that. So when we walked in the gate, there was people that were painting the stadium that started laughing at us, saying, hey, you know, maybe this time. So it was one of those where we had been so many times and come up short. So my junior year, I get drafted by the Cleveland Indians and win the College World Series in the same week. Amazing feeling, but a little bit of sadness. You know, I was told that that experience was going to fill me. And although it was great, you know, I still felt a little empty. I don't know if that was because I was moving on into pro ball or what, but I remember standing around thinking, you know, okay, this is it. You know, I'm waiting to feel great. And I felt like, you know, I started to feel like maybe there's more to life than just baseball. And I think it's one of the things God used to make me consider other things in my area and not in my life and not just baseball.
Did you get to go to the White House?
I did. That was the celebration right there. We won the World Series, got to go to White House, and President H.W. Bush was there. This is the best part, though. It's 1991, and it's the 50-year anniversary of Joe DiMaggio and his hitting streak in the major leagues, and Ted Williams, the last person to hit over 400 when he hit 406 in 1941. So they were there on hand. Ted Williams had the turquoise choker on his collar, looked like John Wayne standing there, and then Joe DiMaggio, you know, I don't need to say anything about him. And we stood for a picture, and I got autographs, and DiMaggio, you know, right before, and DiMaggio came over and stood right next to me, put his hand on my shoulder, as everybody did, to pose for the picture. And I thought, man, one of the most famous guys, an American icon, a legend, is standing right, you know, right here next to me, and I'm getting my picture taken with Joe DiMaggio at the White House. I thought, it can't get any better than this.
You were at the top of the mountain. You've also been on teams at the bottom of the mountain.
Absolutely.
What's the difference? How do you get through both?
Well, you know what? I've had arm surgeries. I've had setbacks. I've gotten released. I've gotten sent down to the minors on a number of different occasions. I've spent around 6 years in the minor leagues and about 12 to 13 in the big leagues, up and down. You know, I just try to worry about the things that I can change and battle, play with heart, and never give up. And so that's something that's been kind of a trademark of Paul Bird in the big leagues, is he's a guy that's going to give you everything he has, regardless of the situation and regardless if I'm on top of the mountain or on the bottom. I don't think that changes anything when it comes to effort and giving all you have.
Talk to us, Paul Bird, about the life of a minor league ball player.
Life of a minor league ball player, you have to love baseball. And, you know, that's what I talk about, that connection of it being with my father and me always loving to play since I was a little boy. You have to love baseball, especially when you're in the minor leagues, because you're on bus trips. You may be bussing through the middle of the night. You may have to sleep on the bus in the middle of the night, be ready to pitch the next day. You don't get paid. There's not a lot of fans. There's not a lot of glamour. And you just grind it out. And actually around 4% of players that get drafted make it to the big leagues. So the odds are stacked against you incredibly. Take that, you know, from somebody like me who's not tall, who's right-handed, short arms, I don't throw hard, and I'm balding. So I'm not your typical big league pitcher that scouts want to see. So when people, you know, I was doing a good job in the minor leagues and people are telling me, doesn't look good for you, son. You know, that was a, those were tough words to hear. But again, just like I'm sure you've had other people on this radio show who have experienced adversity, you have to keep battling and do everything you can to make it.
We're talking to Paul Bird, and 4 years after he gets drafted, in July 28th, 1995, he gets to go to the show.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, we'll ask him about that. And this is Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
You're listening to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Brought to you by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Once again, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
Welcome back. We're with Paul Bird, who's pitched in the majors for 13 years for the Mets, Phillies, Angels, Braves, Royals, and Indians. Almost like that Harry Suitcase Simpson guy.
You got it.
July 28th, 1995.
Uh-huh.
You get to the show. Talk about that day.
Can I go back to 1994?
Sure.
When I'm in Double-A baseball with the Cleveland Indians, and I'm getting people out. In the year before, I'm in Triple-A and get people out and have a good year. They send me back to Double-A. I'm doing well. I'm getting people out. They take me off the Double-A roster. I'm not allowed to play for Double-A or get called up to Triple-A. So I'm sitting in Double-A in the dugout, by myself, not allowed to take the field, not on the roster. Nobody knows what to do with me, and I'm doing my job really well. And so I had just gotten married. I'm on and off of school buses, traveling all around the league. And my wife says, I didn't sign up for this. And I said, what didn't you sign up for? I didn't sign up to never see you, watch you go backwards in your job, and, you know, not even get to play. Can't you see the writing on the wall? And she said, why don't you quit and we go home and live happily ever after? And my thinking was, gosh, you know, one of the greatest and worst things she ever said to me. Greatest because I knew she loved me for me. Worst thing she said to me because I knew she didn't like baseball. She didn't like the lifestyle. And here I felt like this is what God had put in my heart since I was a little boy and something I've always wanted to do. So it was a really tough time for us. We make a decision that we're going to try another year. If it works out and I'm get to the big leagues, great. If not, I'll retire and get my degree and go on and do what whatever else life has in store for me. So we make that deal. I get traded that offseason. Huge blessing to the New York Mets. Get called up. within the year time span. And suddenly it all seems like, worth it maybe. So it was a trying time in my life that previous year. So when I got to the big leagues with the New York Mets, one of the greatest feelings of my life when I got that call that says, the GM with the Norfolk Tides calls me and says, you're going to the big leagues. I'll never forget that feeling. The night before, we had an off day, and my wife and I were out fishing in Norfolk, Virginia. We had no money, and our bank account was dry. We said, let's go fishing. We'll catch, and this is a true story. We're bone dry. And, of course, I can call my parents and ask for money. I don't want to do that. I'm, a day or two away from getting paid with the Mets. And I said, let's go fishing. Let's just go have fun, do whatever. She finds $20 in her purse. And that to us was just tons of money in those days. We ate roast beef sandwiches, went fishing, got home at 4 a.m. I got a call at 8, says, you may be pitching against the Pirates tonight. You got called up to the big leagues. One of the greatest feelings in my life. I pitched that game. I gave up a run, but I pitched very well. Did give up a run on a flare hit over shortstop, but managed to throw strikes, managed to breathe, not pass out, and get the job done.
To a pitcher, it's always a flare hit. To the batter, it was a rocket,
Yeah, so, yeah.
Life is a series of chapters, Paul Bird. You've been traded 6 times.
Absolutely.
What's that like?
They're all great feelings for me. I know a lot of guys get bitter, get angry when they get traded, as if they weren't wanted. And my thinking was, well, somebody just wants me more than the other guy, So I've always felt that getting traded is a good thing, and it just means that somebody cares about you. Doesn't mean your current organization hates you. It just means somebody else wants you even more. So the way I've always looked at it is, at least 2 people or 2 teams have wanted me to be a part of their team, and it's always been a good feeling for me.
Preparation, critical in every job today.
Mm-hmm.
How do you, when you're going to face the Tigers, how do you prepare for that game and to face that lineup?
The technological advances today is amazing. So I get a disc on my chair that has pitchers that are like me. I don't want to see video footage of Johan Santana striking out all of the Tigers, And so what I would get is a pitcher that's similar to me, right-handed, doesn't throw hard, find somebody like that in the league, and I'll watch them pitch against the Tigers and scout them out. All the great pitchers down through the years have all been great preparers. Even if they've had great stuff and great fastballs, and they all still have an analytical mind and know how to get the hitters out, and they all prepare well.
Who's the best pitcher of the last 20 years?
I'm going to go with Greg Maddux, just because he obviously is a great preparer as well. I've just always enjoyed his determination, his wins, his ERA, his strikeouts. Every category looks great for him. He's somebody that's, just set a record for winning 15 games 17 years in a row. So when you see somebody like that, I think that's hard to ignore. He doesn't throw the ball 95 to 100 miles an hour. Not that that's not okay to do so, but he wins with, his brain, his head, and a great amount of movement and things like that. So I would go with him.
The best hitter?
Over the last 20 years, am I allowed to say Barry Bonds?
Sure.
He's the toughest guy that, I probably faced, whether or not he was pharmaceutically enhanced or not. But he was somebody that when he got up to the plate, I would think he wouldn't hit the ball. He just missed that ball. And, it would be 10 rows up into the stands. So he was somebody that I think was probably the best hitter I've faced.
Mental toughness, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Focus. The bases are loaded, nobody out.
Right.
How do you withstand that?
You take deep breaths, Jack. You sit there and you breathe really deep. Everybody has their different keys, but for me, it's just a matter of calming myself down. Baseball, for me, I am not a guy that's going to overpower you. So I have to stay within myself and do the things that I do really well. So I have to know what I do well. What I do well is I control the game by hitting my spots, throw the least expected pitch in a time where I catch the hitter off balance and things like that. So I really have to think. I really have to relax and hit my spots and not overthrow. As soon as I try to throw the ball too hard, I miss my spot. The ball flattens out. It's up in the strike zone, ends up in the seats. I don't always calm myself down, but I try.
With this ESPN,
mm-hmm.
every mistake you make, it's around the world.
Mm-hmm.
You're leading the league, Paul Beard, this year in home runs given up.
You got 24. I didn't know you were going to bring that up. What's this all about? You ambushed me.
How do you get over giving up a home run?
You have to have a short-term memory in baseball, even as a hitter. If you hit 300, think about this. You failed 7 out of 10 times. Baseball's a failure game. When you're out there and you pitch and you give up home runs, I can sit there and sulk. I can sit there and wish I went back in time and I had the pitch to do over again. But then that's going to affect me for the next pitch and the next hitter, and I might give up another one. So the way I look at it is you have to worry about what you do best. You have to forget about your mistakes in the past and focus on the present right now. What pitch do I need to throw? What's the best pitch? Calm yourself down and make it.
The difference between a 250 hitter and a 300 hitter is one extra hit a week.
That's amazing.
That's unbelievable.
I try to tell people that, and young guys that, you know, so it's no wonder that we're so superstitious, because, you know, you find that guy who just has that knack for getting that flare or that broken bat hit. That's why speed is so important in baseball. If you can beat out that infield hit and get a single there once a week, 250 is average, 300 is the best in the league. So the difference between the average player and the best players in the world is one hit a week. And that's an amazing thought.
We're talking to Paul Beard, who's just written a book, Free Bird, The Power of a Liberated Life. When we come back, we'll talk to him about it. And this is Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back to Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Presented by Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm. Now, here's your host, Jack Krasula.
We're talking to Paul Beard, who's just written his autobiography, Free Bird, The Power of a Liberated Life.
You like that title?
Yes.
How about the Lynyrd Skynyrd song, Free Bird? It kind of can get confused at times.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Yes, sir.
First, Paul, what spurred you to write this book?
You know what? A couple of years ago, somebody said to me, and I have two boys, Grayson and Colby, happily married for 14 years, as far as I know. I'm very happy. She tells me she is, so, you know. But yeah, my two boys are, you know, 8, 10 years old, and somebody says if you died, they really wouldn't remember you. And here, my son's, you know, 10 years old. So that was something that really hit me. And I thought, well, you know, how much do I remember before I was 10, before I was 8? Would I really have known my father? So it was a situation where I wanted to write down some things in case something happened to me, to share with them some life lessons that I had learned through baseball and off the field as well. So I started to do so, started journaling, writing down for them. Always have loved to write. Even in grade school, won an award with young authors, and college, took writing courses and got laughed out of critique day at LSU. But I thought, this doesn't matter how good my writing is. I want to write down some life lessons for my kids. I do so. A friend of mine who is a writer says, well, I want to read some of this. So he did. And he says, hey, buddy, he said, this needs to be published. And I said, come on, I'm a horrible writer. He said, no, it's very, very good. It needs to be shaped up a hair, but you've got what it takes. He shops it around. The next thing you know, I have a book deal with Simon & Schuster and a book coming out called Free Bird.
Chapter 11, God is my pitching coach.
Yes. Does that sound fanatical?
Yes.
It is.
I'm a Cubs fan. I think the devil has been our pitching coach for the last 100 years.
There you go. That's right. Yes. Start praying now, Cubs fans. No, it was a situation where I had just was coming back from shoulder surgery. I wasn't getting people out. My arm was killing me. And, you know, it's one of those deals where I am a Christian. I don't try to force my religious viewpoints or spiritual thinking down other people's throats. But if you want to know the real Paul Beard, he's a Christian. And so I am. So, you know, I don't want to be so politically correct that I try to please everybody and not, you know, not tell you who I am just to make everybody happy. So, but that being said, you know, I also don't want to cram it down people's throats. So I say that, you know, with a little bit of salt there. So I'm in the big leagues with Kansas City. I'm struggling to get people out, and I'm praying. And I usually don't
my prayers aren't gimme, 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 my name's Jimmy, I'm out of here. So I don't want to pray to God for, hey, turn my arm into this, let me throw 95. But it was a situation where I really wasn't getting anybody out. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm in my street clothes. I hop the fence to the minor league mounds and go to work on my mechanics to see if I can change my motion or pick anything up that makes my arm feel better, my shoulder especially. And I just sit down and I start praying beside the mound. I just basically said, God, you know, I don't want to come here and manipulate you, but I really want to keep playing baseball. And I don't know if that's in your plan or not. Ultimately, whatever you want's going to pretty much going to happen anyways. But if I have any say in it at all, I would love to stay in baseball. And I've never asked this before, but if you have anything to whisper in my ear when I'm going through these mechanics, I'd love to have it happen. So don't hear anything audibly. You know, there's no Ten Commandments experience like Charlton Heston or anything. I just jump up there and start working on my mechanics and start figuring some little things out. And I think to days of Warren Spahn and think back to the Texas High leg kick of Bob Feller. And I just start goofing around and I'm in my sandals and again, street clothes. And I fall down a couple times and there's dirt and dust blowing. And if any maintenance guy saw that from afar, they think, who is this psycho guy that jumped on the field? And they would have called the police. But anyways, I'm out there looking like an idiot and I'm just praying and trying to figure things out. And I say God became my pitching coach because it was a time where I asked him just for a little bit of help. And I think sometimes we can ask for God in the big grand things, but you know, when we're going to do little things or there's something that, like, again, God being a pitching coach sounds so fanatical, you kind of avoid that. So it was a situation where I just prayed and worked on my mechanics and walked away with a smile on my face. The next day, I had started swinging my arms, bending over and raising my leg a little bit. The next day, I applied these things in batting practice, and some of my teammates walk over and said, man, we thought you were kidding around with some of your windups and mechanics, but it really works. I'm having trouble picking up the ball. And that year, I have one of the best years of my career, win 17 games with Kansas City on a team that had lost over 100, and that was the first time in over 50 years where somebody had done so.
Chapter 4, Paul. Trying to get life and acceptance from the pages of Playboy magazine.
What do you think about that title? Crazy title for a chapter. Yeah, I talk about a little bit where I've struggled with pornography in Major League Baseball and tried to keep that from my wife for years. Doesn't mean that everybody else has to share their struggles with their wife, but it was a situation where I felt like I needed to talk about that in the book. I didn't need to write a book about how great I am. Here's how it's all worked for me, so here's how it needs to work for you, and here's the 12 steps to follow if you want your life to work out perfect and great, like mine has, because it hasn't. So it's a situation where I felt like I really needed to be honest, and I think that's something that our society struggles with today. Some people don't believe it's wrong, and that's fine, but for people that do think it is and they were trying to kick that habit or break that, it was something like I felt like I needed to mention. United States, our largest group of pornography viewers are ages 12 to 17 years old. So when I go and I speak at youth groups and camps or churches and things, and I talk about the fact of, hey, I love God with all my heart, but here's something I've struggled with. You wouldn't believe the jaws that drop on these teenagers and these kids. Some of them with tears come up to me and they say, you know, I so needed to hear you say that because I thought I was the only one in the world that struggled with that. And it's been tough for me at times because, you know, I've struggled with pornography and the next day I'm walking in the locker room and somebody comes up and asks me about Jesus or says, hey, what time's chapel? And I'm putting it down on the board and I feel very hypocritical. So it's something that deeply bothered me and I felt like it was something that needed to be discussed. So I talk about that in the book.
If there's a listener, male or female, struggling with that, what advice do you give them?
Well, from a Christian sense, I feel like God's bigger than your struggle, you know, and I feel like you need to focus on Him and take your issues and struggles to Him. It helps to have a friend to talk to about it so that you don't think that you're the only one in the world. I think sometimes when you hide things or you keep your secrets in a closet, they only manifest and grow bigger. You know, the secrets in the dark places only stay secrets. So when you bring those out, you get a little bit of fellowship
with some other people, get, and I don't want to say accountability in that a sense of a person lords it over you and is always checking on you and is the junior Holy Spirit of your life. I don't mean it like that, but if you get some fellowship with some other guys, be able to share into your struggles, I think there's ways you can find out what it's all about. Is it about loneliness? Is it about something that happened to you as a kid? Is it about patterns that can be reversed? So when I think you attack that problem, I think it gets better. And again, God's bigger than your problem, and when you focus on Him, anything can happen.
Paul Burt, on the way down to the studio together, mm-hmm. you said something. You said, Jack, you have to learn to sit in the pain.
Mm-hmm.
What do you mean by that?
Well,
on the golf course, I sit
absolutely.
In the pain a lot.
I don't mean to put down anything to do with Buddhism, but sometimes we confuse Christianity with Buddhism, or at least I have, where I don't want to feel any pain. I want to avoid any type of trouble, problems, situations. And so my life should not be about avoiding the pain. There's lessons in the pain. There's things that happen. In that chapter, I talk about a car dealer who tells me a story about squirrels, where this lady, and I'm thinking to myself, what can somebody possibly learn spiritually from squirrels? And this, he tells me the story of this lady who was feeding squirrels off her deck, and you know, she didn't have any other pets, so she eventually put these nuts, these shelled nuts, on her porch. The squirrels come into the porch, they stay there while they're eating the nuts, she shuts the door. So now the squirrels are free from the outside danger of the world. No dogs, kids with BB guns or anything, they're safe on her porch. Now instead of handing them shelled nuts, she hands them, nuts that have shells on them. Now she gets out her can of shelled pecans, which is planters. They don't have to do any work to get to them. They're already taken out of the shell. All kinds of mixed nuts form there. No danger or anything. You know what happened to the squirrels? They died. And I said to my car dealer friend, what happened? Is this a horror film? She killed them? What happened? She said, no. They died because their teeth grew too long. They were designed that when they cracked the nuts and experienced the filing down of the shells, made their teeth the proper size they were supposed to be. So their teeth grew too long, extended out beneath their mouth. Soon they were grotesque and died. And you know, it's stories like that where I realize that God's designed us to experience pain. It's not a bad thing. We don't have to enjoy it or like it, but there's purpose to it. And so now when I look at my kids, I'm not about making my two boys' life so comfortable that they don't have to do anything. What kind of life would you have if you sat in front of a TV with a big clicker and a bunch of pillows, had no pressure, had no pain, had no trials to work through? So the trials are there for a reason. They make you stronger. Again, we don't have to like them, but how we respond to the pain and the trials in our life, in my opinion, is everything.
We're talking to Paul Burt, and I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, presented by Trust in Us on News Talk 760 WJR.
Trust in Us, a world-class executive search firm, presents Anything Is Possible with Jack Krasula on News Talk 760 WJR.
Welcome back. We're with the Cleveland Indians starting pitcher, 13-year major leaguer, Paul Burt. Paul, getting back to the book, Chapter 13, Faith in the HGH Scandal.
Absolutely. I start that chapter off by talking about you know, Mahatma Gandhi. He makes a statement and he says, if it weren't for Christians, I would become one. So obviously people have had some bad experiences. That's true. I talk I list myself as one of the people to blame, because early in my career and my Christian walk, I beat people up with the Bible, shoved religion down their throats. And, you know, I regret that now. But the bottom line is I had just become a Christian. I thought God would like me better the more work I did for Him, which is mistaken. And so I talk about that a little bit. The HGH scandal hits last year. When I am in Boston, we need to win one game to go to the World Series. And so on a Sunday, when we're playing the Red Sox in Fenway Park, that morning it comes out that I've used HGH. So it's a situation where I had originally begun using HGH for off-the-field benefits. I had lost about 20 to 25 pounds. Experienced a lot of fatigue, sore throat, had to send my wife and two boys home during the season because I was struggling so bad with a lot of off-the-field issues. A friend suggests, hey, go get your hormones checked. With all due respect to women in their 50s and 60s, I thought,
that's for some lady going through menopause, isn't it? You know, that was my response. Nobody in their 30s can struggle. No male struggles with things like that. So I went over to a clinic, got a clinic and a real doctor in the Atlanta area who checked me and said, you have low growth hormone. So I began supplementing with growth hormone, and the responses from me were fantastic. I started to get my life back, a lot better, off the field things, sleeping, escaped a lot of the chronic fatigue and was able to bounce back and recover. The problem was that doctor switched my records to a place in Palm Beach, and a clinic there in Palm Beach did some unethical things, and that's how my name got leaked out to the press. So when that came out, I had to tell my story. Hey, here's how it started. I'm not cheating or disrespecting baseball by taking something that's not prescribed to me or getting it under a different name or taking steroids and cheating by throwing 95 when God made my arm only have the ability to throw 87. So it was a situation where I had to explain myself, but coming on the heels of a lot of things that happened in Major League Baseball where guys had pointed their fingers at Congress and said some things that weren't true, it really didn't look good for me in a sense of no matter what I said, my affiliation with this clinic that had done something unethical, you know, the jury was out on Paul Byrd. And I really likened that to my faith in that you have a choice of to believe my story or not, and you're either going to make a choice to have faith in Paul Byrd's story or not. And I liken that to a little bit of the spiritual side. And I connect that to the part of, you know, I could have done damage to other people or given them a reason to say, hey, this guy's not the real deal. Or and he's just like some of the other Christians who have abused his spiritual side and kind of used God. So I think you had a choice to make about Paul Byrd last year.
When you think of Major League Baseball player, you don't automatically think of a Christ-centered man. And you've done both of them successfully. How?
A man once said to me, and this is very true, it's very, very hard to be fully devoted to two different things. So if you're a baseball player, it's one of the most demanding jobs in the world. It's hard to be a good marriage partner. It's hard to be a good whatever else. And so I think sometimes two people rank things and they say, okay, well, God's first, my family's second, my job's third. And it's hard to be fully devoted to many different areas in your life, even being a father, being a, so, you know, you can go on and on. But, you know, I've kind of changed that. And my thinking is, you know, I don't want to rank the things. I want God to be first in my marriage. I want him to be first in my baseball career. I want him to be first in my fatherhood. And so I tried to be fully there for everything that I was at and fully devoted to the task at hand and live in the present. So when I was at the ballpark, I prayed and really wanted to be a 100% there in the locker room, leave my problems with the home, at home, and focus on taking the field and doing my best job. Just like you say about, you know, what do you do after you give up a home run? Well, I forget about it and focus on the next pitch because that's what matters. When I go home, I try to leave the stuff at the field at the park and go home and be fully a husband and be fully a father when I'm with my kids. So I've tried to do that. I'm not saying I'm the world-class person at all those things, but I've really tried my hardest to be fully there and to make everything work.
Paul Byrd, you've been blessed in many, many ways.
Yes, I have.
One of the greatest, meeting Kim, your wife.
Oh, I appreciate you saying that.
Talk about her.
Well, she is somebody that, you know, when I walk off the field, I can get a standing ovation or I can get booed and people want my autograph, but she is so much of the backbone of just supporting our family and being there. And she has a really tough job because I'm gone a lot of the times. And so what she thinks is she feels like a single mom, and then she's married every other week, and then a single mom again, and then married. So for her, the hardest thing for us has been to maintain that connection when I'm on road trips. We do get an off season that's great, but you know what I'm saying, Jack, even that's a little out of balance when you're around the house for 3.5 months straight. So it's something where you got to juggle some things. You got to talk. I love my wife. She has a tremendous sense of humor and she is just so fun to be around. After 14 years, we still like being with each other and it's been a crazy trip, but something that wouldn't change for the world.
Does she let you be home for lunch?
She does. We you know, we have a really good time together, and I think that's what's so important in marriage. I see people that
They constantly put each other down. They're almost in competition with one another. We're not like that. We love each other. We know we have two boys to raise in a difficult sport, one that has a high divorce rate. So something that we need to concentrate and just focus on what we need to do for our marriage.
Last question, Paul Bird. What advice would you give to our young listeners tonight?
Oh, gosh. That is a tough one. I would just say follow your heart, live from your heart, believe, and connect with God. I think He's the person, the constant that never changes in your life. And I think having a real relationship and talking to Him is everything. This world is not going to be kind to you. You will have trouble in this world. But, as Jesus said, take heart in me, I've overcome the world. My relationship with Him is everything. And if I'm going to answer you honestly, I really believe that's what life's all about.
Paul Bird, what a role model.
Oh, I appreciate that.
Keep up the great work.
Thank you so much, Jack. I appreciate you having me on your show.
Best of luck. Our guest next Sunday will be another person from the athletic field, Susie Merchant, the head coach of the MSU women's basketball team. Until then, I'm Jack Rasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spahom.